Ladies and gentlemen, it is 5:30 p.m. This is a city council work meeting. The date is June 18th, 2025. The meeting is being held at the city council chambers, offices, 10 North Main Street in Cedar City. I've been asked to offer the invocation, after which Mr. Tom Jett will lead us in the pledge. Our Father, which art in heaven, we are grateful this evening to be gathered in this historic place to transact the matters of the city. We pray for those who are here to represent the citizens, the city council. Bless them with wisdom and understanding of the positions that are before them this night. Bless our citizenry, that they will understand that many of these decisions are difficult and that they will understand the decisions that have been made. We pray for our community. We pray that there will be peace and security amongst our streets. We pray for our neighborhoods. Bless our citizens to be neighborliness, show neighborliness, be neighborly to the people who live near them. Be kind. We pray for kindness from our citizens. Pray for them to be kind to the old and the lonely and the weak and the handicapped, and those that are struggling, and those that are mourning and have depression. And we pray, Father in heaven, that our citizens will be helpful to them and to others in need, whatever their needs may be. We are grateful for our great heritage in this community. We pray that it may continue, that our quality of life will be as we desire. And we pray for thy blessings upon this meeting in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor, I would... let me get my microphone on. Mayor, I would move that we approve the agenda order for this work meeting on June 18th.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. If Talisha Myers would come up, and also David Johnson, if you'd join her here at the microphone, I'd like to read she has a commendation. This is the award that she received and is going to be presented this night. Last Friday, the House State Historic Preservation Office presented awards statewide. Our own, very own Talisha Myers was awarded the Spirit of Main Street Award for the state. Senator Evan Vickers and Tricia Harris accepted the award on her behalf. We want to recognize Talisha publicly tonight. I hope I'm saying your name right.
It's Talisha.
Talisha, I apologize. I probably won't remember that either. Talisha publicly tonight at the Cedar City Council meeting and honor her with this award. The purpose of the award is to honor a community leader whose vision and unwavering dedication has been instrumental in the ongoing success and vibrancy of Main Street. Their enduring commitment and positive influence has shaped the community. Talisha has helped to collaboration amongst our Main Street and historic downtown businesses. Her efforts have helped create a vibrant Main Street district where business owners feel seen, valued, and connected. Talisha leads the compassion, dedication, and a people-first approach that sets her apart. She builds personal relationships with local businesses, offering not only professional support, but genuine friendship and encouragement. Whether she's advocating for resources, organizing initiatives, or lending a listening ear, her impact is deeply felt. With vision, kindness, and unwavering commitment, Talisha examples what it means to lead with the true spirit of Main Street. And so we thank you, and we'd like to give you a chance, and you maybe starting with Mr. Johnson, make any comment beyond that before we take pictures.
Yeah. Talisha is top-notch, as the state has recognized. Tricia Harris surprised Talisha by submitting her name for this award. And our historic downtown in Main Street is constantly recognized. In fact, at the awards, those from the state used Cedar City as an example of a well-done Main Street. And the key of what Talisa has done is really created collaboration and cohesiveness with our historic downtown and our Main Street businesses. And the personal relationships that she has built have been just invaluable. So we really appreciate her effort. And, you know, she does it on very little time each week, but the time that she puts in, we get a big bang for our buck on the ROI with Talisa and all of her efforts. So I don't know if you want to add anything, Talisa.
It's been a pleasure. So I don't know if you all know this, but I'm stepping down for personal reasons with my family, but I have loved having this opportunity. It's been 2.5 years, and I'll be honest, it started all because I just volunteered to help with the downtown lighting ceremony, and here I am today getting this award, so I'm very, very honored. So thank you.
Thank you. Why don't you come up?
Mayor, could I say one thing, please? I've had the pleasure of working with Talisa on our Historic Downtown Committee and a lot of other special events throughout the city of our events office. And everything that they said in that citation is absolutely true. She leads with kindness. She's highly organized. And she's got a great listening ear. She has done more to build relationships between City Hall and our Main Street. And it was desperately needed. We're going to have a difficult time filling your shoes. We understand your need to leave, but we hope that maybe in due time you might find your way back into other service to the community. But I just personally want to thank you for everything you've done.
Come up. Kent, can you raise the screen so we can see our seal?
I was tasked with being the photographer by our very own Gabby Costello.
So. Oh,
you can pass that to somebody out there.
Oh, you want to join us?
Where's your husband tonight? Oh, there he is.
Perfect.
He just got
timing.
Here in time.
Get in here for a picture.
Get up in here for a photo, buddy.
No. I'm fine, Mayor. You just get in there. No, I just want to get out of the picture.
Hey, we can all just go.
Mm-hmm.
We can go right off the edge.
Yeah,
just out the door.
Please come through and let us congratulate you, Talisa. Will you start down here so we can congratulate you?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you and congratulations.
First Cedar. This is really, really big.
It's big for you.
Yeah, but I'm more happy that it's Cedar.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just have one announcement. The Levitts are doing a little ribbon cutting down on 900 West by the university where the big apartment got built down there, and they're doing that Friday at 11 a.m., if any of you are interested. It's interesting. They have picked some names to name those halls, and there's four of them that have been called, and they come. They're names that come out of the neighborhood down there, and one of them is a first cousin of mine, Travis Nelson, who was a Vietnam War pilot who died in a training mission back in the day, but he was one of Dixie Levitt's Boy Scouts and baseball players, and so they've named one after him. There's three others from down the neighborhood, and we'll see what happens. We each get a few minutes, and so it'll be interesting to hear what gets said on.
Well, the official name of the building, Mayor, is Travis Towers.
Yeah.
So it's actually the name of the whole building.
But it has.
Is there more than one Travis?
There's other names on different parts.
Correct.
Of it. Travis Towers is there. I don't know. I'll find
it's out.
It's
at 11 a.m.
11 a.m. down there. Might be okay. Kind of fun.
Yeah.
Sort of a goodwill. I think it's beautiful. I think it's beautiful even though they had to take down the church I grew up in all those many years. But still a beautiful building.
Yeah.
state was going down on its own.
That's all I have, Council. Do you have matters?
Mayor, I just have one small report I want to make. That last Thursday, 5-6 days ago, we had a group from Church in the Park that volunteered and did some community service. They went out and they picked up trash at the middle interchange. And they spent about an hour and a half picking up, and I think they ended up with about 6 bags of trash. It's just amazing what ends up at the interchanges. But I just wanted to thank them for their service to Cedar City.
Thank you. Council?
I had a couple citizens on Cove Heights Circle. They have a storm drain that's plugged. They said the city came out and said it was a tree root, but they didn't do anything about it, or is there something that can be done anyway? If you'll look into that, it's Cove Heights Circle drains down to Cove Drive, and it has plugged in the past, and then obviously is going to create some flooding if we get some rain this monsoon season. So,
Mayor, you good?
I'm good.
Mayor, I had a citizen reach out to me, and then I went and looked at it myself, and I tend to agree. You know, I'm not one. I do know we have a nuisance ordinance that talks about weeds on property and that kind of stuff, and you know, where I might stand might be a little different than other people, but the one area where I struggle is when those weeds literally make a sidewalk impossible to pass, then that's when I think we do have a reason to step in and say, you know, you're impeding people being able to get by. The property right there off of 100 East behind Bradshaw Chevrolet, once you pass the library and all that, to the rest of that sidewalk on the library side and then make the corner to go down back towards Main Street, you can't even tell there's a sidewalk there.
Yep. Right.
I mean, it's completely overgrown on both sides. You couldn't walk down that sidewalk if you tried. So I don't know what we need to do. Again,
contact the owner.
So can we pass that on to that would be the code enforcement that would do it, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it's code enforcement.
Okay. So if they're not willing to do something about it, then we need to, I think we move forward with whatever repercussions we do have. And it's just, again, if you have weeds on your property, I'm not that big of a stickler, but when they impede on the actual sidewalk, then that becomes a problem in my opinion.
Sidewalk and fire hazard are the...
So.
Sounds like a good...
Huh?
Never mind.
Oh, yeah. Eagle Scout project?
Well, I was saying fire department, maybe she'd take care of that.
Sounds like it.
Bradshaw,
who's
that for? Let's call Mark. I got his number.
Yeah.
I can call him. I know Mark.
Thanks, guys. Staff, come on tonight.
They're not even here.
Back row empty. Wow.
The corners, peanut gallery is gone. Public comments tonight. Seeing none. The public agenda, item number one, considered a cooperative access agreement, management agreement with the UDOT. Please, Chris.
Thank you, Council, for allowing me some time to present. UDOT and the city has been working together for quite some time.
You have to state your name, sir.
Sorry. Chris Hall, UDOT Region.
We know who
Planning
you are,
Manager.
But you have to do it for the record.
So what we want to do is kind of present a couple of different things. The first thing is we did a solutions development process about a year ago that we didn't ever present to the council because we were working on fine-tuning the agreement, the end of it, and now we're ready to get that signed. So I wanted to quickly go over this process that we went through, and we just kind of looked at the process from a goals perspective of what do the state routes in Cedar City look like? What's the vision? What does the community want to see them? What are we going to get out of them? Are there changes that need to be made on them? So we just kind of looked at those state routes, SR-56 from all the way out past the Y, and then all of SR-130 in Cedar City boundaries. And we started out by saying, let's develop some goals to look at this. So if you want to go down a little bit, Kent, to the goals. We worked with a lot of stakeholders and said, what goals do we want to come out of this process? And that's what we wanted to evaluate the different options against. So we wanted to enhance safety for everyone as goal number one. And these goals aren't specifically in order of importance. They're just all four goals that we wanted to accomplish. Second one is to plan efficient access to the destinations. Goal three, create multimodal roadways. And goal four, work together to develop feasible solutions. So we went through this process. We looked at a lot of the existing data. We looked at crashes. We looked at accesses. We looked at intersections. We looked at driveways, really broadly looked at just traffic numbers in general and said, what are the things that we can do to help further these goals that we just discussed? So we came to some kind of ideas of visions of what those state routes would look like. And they vary a little bit between the routes in different areas based on the type of use that it's that's around it. So, you know, obviously downtown's going to have a different vision and solution than some of the edges of SR 130, of Cedar Main Street. And the same thing with SR 56, kind of that east and west of I-15 has a very different feel, and so the vision for those roadways should be different. And I don't want to spend a lot of time here. We can give you the link to this so you can look at it in more detail if you have more questions about it. But I want to let you know that we kind of came with a vision of, you know, where the bike lanes are, how these roadways are going to look. And it's not something that UDOT currently has any funding to try and do now. The roadways are functioning fine with the amount of traffic they have. They still have capacity left in them for quite a few years. But in the future, when there is need for UDOT to come in and do projects on our state routes, we want to make sure we incorporate this vision into those projects to make sure we're making it more walkable and a safer community. And that kind of led to some of the things that we can do now is what this access management agreement is about. As part of this process, there's a lot of closely spaced accesses on the state routes. And when you have lots of accesses, it generally causes more congestion and less safe roads because of the conflicts because of all those accesses. So we wanted to get an agreement so UDOT and the city were both on the same page of, like, this is how we want to reduce accesses and where we're going to allow signals and future intersections to make sure we're preserving the traffic flow along the state route. So we kind of came to agreement of saying, here's some ideal locations that can have signals in the future that make sense, places where we may need to put center median barrier in there to improve safety on the route. And then also, whenever there's redevelopment of the properties along Main Street, we want to try and consolidate accesses. But it's not something, this effort isn't something to try and go redo accesses that are already permitted and already there. But as development changes and new development comes, we want to make sure we're applying these good access management principles to make sure that the road stays safe and functional in the future.
Chris, are you saying in the streets and signals, that little comment, there's only one street in downtown that meets standards?
According to UDOT's access standards, yes.
Which one is that?
400 South, I believe. All the other ones are spaced closer together than what we would normally allow. If we were to build the city from this point there, we wouldn't allow that many city streets and other accesses along the state.
You mean 400 South to what?
It's 600 the spacing. It's depending on access category. Like there's different access categories along the state route, and those are assigned. And they have different spacing for city streets, different spacing for driveways of what's allowed based on that access category. Mm. And a good example is like the access category for kind of the downtown portion is different than the northern portion of Main Street. And it's color-coded there, so you've got category 3, 4, 5, and 6. And they vary, and you can see that signal spacings are 1,300 feet to 2,600 feet, about a half a mile. And that's what we're saying is that currently those accesses are closer than what is ideal to maintain traffic flow and have a safe road as well. So that's what we're saying is that everything is there is less than ideal, and so it creates more congestion and less safe roads by having that many. So we want to try and reduce those in the future and limit those to what seems applicable or what's feasible.
Is that safe flow dependent on speed limit, or what do you consider when you say it impedes safe flow?
It's the conflict points. Whenever you have a driveway and you're driving down Main Street, that driver has to look for a car pulling out in a conflict point where cars could crash. So whenever there's a driveway, whenever there's an intersection, that's just more conflict points where accidents or crashes generally happen. So the more you have, the more accidents and crashes that occur, just because there's more chances of where cars collide.
But the traffic lights are listed as does not meet the standard.
Yeah.
Less crashes with the traffic light.
Yeah, that's oftentimes we see a lot of crashes at traffic lights. And depending on the speed of the roadway, we often see an increase in crashes when signals go in. But it also helps the traffic flow more efficiently if there's enough traffic on the side street. So it's kind of a trade-off of what is needed there, because sometimes they can cause more crashes, but they also can reduce delay. So there's always this balance of safety versus moving people around and getting them to their destination. There's always a trade-off there.
If I could, I'd like to just jump in for a minute on that topic. At the last city I worked for, we went through a lot of this same type of analysis, and we did a lot with properties as they redeveloped to consolidate accesses. We actually removed some traffic signals, which improved safety, believe it or not. The crashes went down. We did a lot of those kinds of things to, doing a lot of a lot of median curb in places where we couldn't safely allow left turns in and out of driveways to continue. So we did a lot of what is talked about in this access management plan, and it was very successful in decreasing crashes. Any challenges that posed in terms of access to properties, people seemed to very quickly find what they needed to do to get to in and out of some place without being able to make left turns. They just changed their route to how they get somewhere. And it was very successful in helping us to improve safety and keep traffic moving safely and efficiently down the road. So that's just one thing I wanted to mention about all these things that Chris is talking about here. They really are meaningful. They have there are a lot of gains to be had from trying to meet a better access management standard.
So I think that's kind of the analysis of what I wanted to go over, is just that we looked at all this, and that was kind of drove this need for this agreement to say, let's sign an agreement that says this is what we want to accomplish in the future, so that UDOT and the city are all moving towards that same goal, to say we both agree that this is a good way to move forward to make the roads in Cedar safer, and also make sure that the traffic is functioning as good as we can possibly make it.
Does this, how tightly does this agreement tie the hands of the city? I mean, it is a guidepost, it is a master plan, if you will, but, something could come in to alter where you say you were planning to have a median, now you're not going to because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. So it identifies some locations for median. Nothing has been funded or saying we're moved forward. It's an interesting thing because UDOT does have control of the state route. So
we have
right to permit or deny access and also put those things in there based on the need of safety and stuff. But it's not the way UDOT wants to work. We don't want to come in and say we're going to do what we want with our road. We want to work together with the city to say what works for everybody. So this agreement is just saying this is kind of agreed upon up front to say here's some, with the data, here's some priority areas that in the future we may need to do. But it will be worked out in the design process that we'll work with the city to say, does these locations make sense? How can we change the design or adjust designs to make sure that there's as least impact as possible? And still accomplish the safety benefits. There's a couple priority locations that would be great to do now because it would really reduce crashes, but we don't have any identified funding, and so it's one of those things that we're just going to have to move along and say if it gets to the point where there's so many crashes, we'll try and find some funding for it. But right now, I don't think there's any plan to say we got to do it now, but we want that be well known of a signed agreement, so if anybody's looking to redevelop, they're going to know that there's a possibility of a median in the future, so they can make their plans accordingly.
One of the things I wanted to do really quickly, and this is all contained in lists within the agreement that was in your packet.
Yeah.
But I thought it might be helpful to look visually at some of this. So we have existing traffic signals. I'm just starting up at the North Interchange. I'm going to scroll down through. We do show on here areas, locations where there currently are not traffic signals. That'll be this yellow signal head that you'll see as we go down through this. Those are locations that if the traffic volumes in the future justify that signal going in, those are locations that it, that UDOT has agreed a signal could potentially go in. Doesn't mean there will be a signal there, because the, we may not get the traffic that justifies it. But so thereby the Ag Credit Union up there at the north end, that's one location, 1600 North. You can see these as we come down through. So UDOT has tried in putting this list together, and of course we were giving them comments on this as well, tried to identify, you know, if we're only going to have a limited number of signals on the route, where can those signals do the most good? You know, this one here at 900 North is a good example of one that's actually probably too close to the next signal, but when you look at the street network and how everything comes together, that's a location that made sense. And so UDOT put that one on the list. And you'll see that, so those are in the list of, in your packet, but I just wanted to show that here. I'm showing the, the Cedar Knolls signal as existing, even though it's not quite existing yet, but it's under construction.
I didn't think we had one existing signal.
Knolls are up.
You know, as we go out to the west on Highway 56, there would be no new signals up in town, but as you continue west of that last signal at Lund Highway / Westview, there are some identified locations where signals could go in the future. And the attempt has been made to space those out at reasonable spacing according to UDOT spacing guidelines. The one other thing I wanted to just kind of highlight is that throughout both of these corridors, there's the potential for median curb at some point in time to be needed at almost any given location on there as traffic gets to where those would come into play. But there are some areas, and those are what we've highlighted in red on here, that are, you know, higher priority locations, locations where it's more likely that curbs would go in sooner than at the other locations. So we tried to kind of identify those on the map. Out on the north end, it's not so much that we'd have to have that, that those aren't really the priority locations. The priority locations, probably no surprise, are in the areas where there's a lot of traffic and a lot of traffic movements, turning movements being made that are creating those conflict points that Chris talked about earlier. You know, some of these areas, I think, you know, you just think in your mind when you drive through these, and you can probably see why they're shown as high priority locations. Of course, with the interchange reconstruction from the south interchange, there will be, according to the preliminary plan that was developed, some locations with median curbing there, for the very reasons we're talking about, that they'll be needed in the future at some of the other locations. So I just wanted to go over that just to kind of help give a visual representation of those lists of locations that are in the agreement.
And is then, I know you've been working with UDOT, so is staff comfortable with the recommendations that have come out of the agreement? Because it's quite extensive.
Yeah, and you know, Paul and I both had comments that we gave back to Chris that Chris was able to incorporate, and we had a chance to discuss those with him. From my perspective, based on my past experience and seeing the results of good access management, I'm 100% on board with what's proposed in this agreement. I think it's exactly what we need to do on these key roadways. Just happens that our most key roadways in town are state roads. That wasn't necessarily the case in my last city. We had a lot of city streets where we were dealing with these exact same issues, you know, where it was just the city. But this is a good approach, I believe, to help us have roadways that are safe and functional well into the future.
So where do we go from here?
So I think the draft agreement is ready for signatures. If you guys approve it, we can route it for signatures and have it signed and then filed both with UDOT and the city.
Yeah. So our hope would be to bring that back to you for action next week.
We all good with that? Yeah, let's put it on action.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Because we still have to approve the final whatever they do anyway. So
yeah.
Item number two, public hearing to consider an ordinance vacating easements for drainage construction and a public trail located approximately 789 Cross Hollows Road.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tim Watson with Watson Engineering. I've been working with several members of the staff trying to get a few areas readjusted for some easements. To give you a proximity, this is the major corner of Cross Hollow Road. We have the Silver Silo here to the right-hand side, and then the City Pond is here a little bit further to the left. What we're asking to vacate is this orange easement, which is a pedestrian easement for access to the pond. If I can refresh your memories, a little while ago we talked about combining the pedestrian and drainage easement of the box culvert underneath Cross Hollow Road, and we're going to extend that pedestrian easement into the pond area that way. Right now, that blue easement is only listed as a drainage easement, so part of this is vacating that drainage easement and creating a pedestrian and drainage easement on together over that. So we're vacating the orange, vacating the blue, and vacating a portion of this lighter yellow, what I'll call yellow, because there's an existing 50-foot wide temporary construction easement for this section when it's built. Now we only need 40 feet for that construction, so we're making some modifications. But in the end, after the vacation, you will have a new drainage and pedestrian easement from Cross Hollow Road over to the pond.
What is the pink or the red or whatever?
That is an existing access easement for the pond. Mm. There's been some discussion with the new landowner to the south that there may be a street that comes in here. So there, hopefully someday there will be a permanent access instead of just the access easement. But we'll let them address that when that time comes.
So when all is said and done, if we were to do this, what color are we looking at?
Basically the blue. The blue and the yellow. The yellow, again, is the construction easement to build the rest of the blue easement.
But a little bit skinnier because we don't need
it. Yes, correct.
As much.
Well, I didn't show the 50-foot temporary construction easement on top of the yellow 40-foot. Just they would blend together. So that's ultimately what we're getting rid of, is just a couple
and
of easements.
And it does line up with the current box culvert, correct?
Yes, the current box culvert ends somewhere at the edge of the right-of-way. It will be extended and then an open channel. I don't know what you'd call that, an open access from the top. It won't be completely boxed in for the pedestrian.
Trail, just like along Coal Creek or something like that.
It'll have sides on it, so it's more of kind of a U-shaped channel so that there's open air access from the top. So we don't have a long, dark corner underground for pedestrians.
Is it going to have riprap on it or what?
Concrete is the last that we talked about with the city staff, is using a concrete box culvert without a top is what it'll look like, something along that
have
line.
Have we talked about this at all with our leisure services folks?
Sure. Extensively.
And they're okay with the modifications?
Sure, yeah. So the advantage, like Tim said, was the old design had a very long box culvert,
yep.
And it was dark, and we'd have to light it. This shortens up the box culvert, opens it up to the sunshine, and makes it a little more pedestrian friendly.
And multi-purpose in the same spot.
Correct. And will bring us connectivity with some of our trails.
And then kind of in conjunction with that, if I could, the plan would also be that when a major intersection goes in on Cross Hollow there, where the road comes down out of Saddleback, that would give an opportunity for an at-grade pedestrian crossing across the road, and that would connect through the development so that we give people an alternate route
if they're not disposed
to want to go through the tunnel. They'll have an alternate route that would be available to them.
I think one thing to keep in mind here, too, is the, you know, some years ago now, we had a pedestrian fatality in this area. And, you know, granted, I'm not sure, you know, their night games and stuff like that were involved, but, you know, we need to have safe crossings, and we don't really have one for over a mile in each direction on this road. So I think it's going to be critical to have a good safe crossing here.
I'm assuming, so have the property owners, because this goes over, majority of this is on, who owns this property, the front?
So to the south is...
Levitt Land.
Levitt Land, or one of their...
Armbrust.
Some,
Development team.
What is it?
Development team's on
Thank
the
you.
South.
Thank you, yes,
Development LLC. Team
Armbrust is on the north. South,
and then this is the Armbrust family properties.
Okay, so part of the, because part of this easement goes on the, on Development Team's property, correct?
Correct. And they've signed. Yep, they've signed.
And a copy, yeah, a copy of the deed of easement that's being used is in your packet. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is probably a smart idea.
Mm-hmm. Just trying to clean it up a little bit.
Yeah, and I love all the colors. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I look at this and I'm like, I am so confused.
No,
that's easy. There's a lot of colors. There's a lot of colors.
It's a rainbow. It's wonderful.
And if you're colorblind, that's even worse.
Oh, if you were colorblind, yeah, this would not be a fun thing to try and read.
This is a public hearing, so I'll open the public hearing now.
Phil Schmidt, just a question. So if this is going to be a public case, is the box culvert currently, it's not a straight through shot. It's got some zigs and zags and jogs inside it. I don't know if you have walked through it, but if you haven't, you probably should. So if we make this a walkway, is that going to be fixed? And also, if you're going to make this a public access, then I would be thinking that the grate would be coming off.
Correct.
That's correct.
Both of those are correct.
Yeah, they are correct. We will make improvements in there, and the grate would have to come off. You're right.
So the jigs and zags and zogs through the actual tunnel would be straightened out.
Correct.
Straightened. When it's not straight, it opens up the top.
Yeah, but there's some steps and turns. And
correct. We've looked
it's
at that.
Good, and
it
so
would be
like
straightened out.
That.
Yeah, I mean, not straightened, but it will be cleaned up so you can.
That would be part of this project? Mm-hmm. Or would that
It'll
be
probably be part of the trail project. I'm not sure.
Part of that's our.
So as far as project-wise, this is a city project. We'd have to get the funding for it. The first step was to get the land use cleaned up because of the old easements and old stuff. So that's the first step. Then we'll get the funding for it, and then we'll install.
Then we'll fix everything.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Wendy Green. So I have to understand that this blue part is below road level, or is it along road level?
No, below. So it's going to be below the road.
So it'll catch the drainage.
Yeah, it'll accommodate the water flowing through it when there's actually water in there.
So most it won't be safe for people to walk in then?
Not during flash flooding. No, yeah. But nine days out of ten, it's going to be nice.
Nice and sunny.
Just walk through it. Yeah.
And even on that 10th day, it'll probably be 2 hours that's bad, and then after that, it's okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So is that the same that's below the road right now? It's just going to be opened up, or is that going to be taken out where the sheep were supposed to go through?
I think it's different than the sheep
tunnel. It's not the sheep tunnel. That's farther up by Walmart. This is down by Silver Silo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
How tall are the walls on this box culvert?
Tim Watson with Watson Engineering. I think it's a 10-foot box.
Yeah, you
culvert.
Can walk through it.
Mm-hmm. So you could get a side-by-side through there.
But, I mean, even when it's open, how tall will the walls be?
Oh.
This is going to match.
Yeah, probably.
I guess my question is, the reason I was getting at is, and I know this is a very not likely, but... In the case of a flash flood, if a person happens to be down in there, are there like periodically ladders or a way a person could get out of this box culvert without having to run to the end?
Eventually, they should be able to swim out into the pond. I don't know. I can't answer that.
It's not that long.
No.
The obstructions at the end are going to be removed.
We're going to hang.
So it's going to be open.
It's okay. The flotation devices will be hanging in the.
Oh, okay. The life preservers. You know, no. There have been some discussions. We had some discussions about possibly providing street level access somewhere up there.
Okay.
That's never really been developed. We're just trying to get this easement in place right now.
Yeah.
Well, and this isn't the design. Well, this is just getting the easement.
Well, the tricky thing is you have an area that pops out or a ladder or something, and then that's another thing to create an eddy or a snag for debris when it does come through. So it,
vandalism, all sorts of good stuff.
Yeah. So it is tough. But just run fast.
To answer your question, Councilman Wilkie, right now this is still in the conceptual stage, but that's what we've talked about. One of the reasons why they are trying to straighten that out is so that it is a little bit easier to maintain and security purposes.
Thank you.
So other public comments? Seeing none.
Put that on action. Ask that we put this on action next week.
Thank you. Thank you. The next one is...
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Item number 3, public hearing to consider modifications to Section 26-I-4 and 32-8 and Engineering Standards Detail 4.6.1 pertaining to the definition of a site-obscuring vest and other fencing requirements.
Tyler Melling with Cottonwood Hollow, LLC. I'll be abstaining on this item and sitting in the
audience.
Councilman,
it's good to see you up there in front of us again.
Yeah, it's fun. I usually get beat up when I'm down here. So, this is something that's been talked about quite a bit, but with some of the fence ordinances that came through last year, you know, there were quite a few things cleaned up. But at the end of the day, throughout our ordinance, we have quite a bit of conflict and quite a few restrictions on materials that can be used for site obscuring fences for different types of uses. When this went to Planning Commission, there were a number of items that were more cleanup and continuity type items. Those were tabled until the second set of meetings in July. So we're still waiting for recommendation from the Planning Commission on that. But specifically what Cottonwood Hollow LLC is looking at is the Hershey Farm north of Gemini Meadows is about an 8-acre subdivision, and it's a mix of townhomes and single-family homes. So there's some of that fence that will be HOA maintained and some that will be maintained by individual homeowners. The city ordinance would, in some of those cases, require all of that fence be masonry, except for the fence between the units. Which, again, is as we look at, throughout town, we have a lot of PUDs, HOAs that maintain masonry fence, and they generally have the means and expertise to hire engineers and licensed professionals in the several thousands of dollars to repair those fences when they fail. Individual homeowners generally do not. And so as we're planning for this subdivision, that's one of the factors we're looking at is we'd rather not have masonry fences and would like to be consistent throughout, especially in that single family portion. So we're asking for a modification to the definition of site obscuring fence to allow for other materials like wood or vinyl. In this case, we would be using vinyl, but would suggest opening it up to any other type of site obscuring material that people could use, especially, you know, those like wood and vinyl can be done with unskilled labor, a few hundred dollars, you can fix your fence without having to hire an engineer. No offense to engineers. It's just tough when individual homeowners have to hire them. Don Boudreau, because there was so much that goes into other aspects of the city, had prepared a slideshow, and we'll get into the nuts and bolts on some of the continuity things, because there's this is referenced, I think it's 3 different times in our zoning ordinance and once in our engineering standards, and all of them conflict even as they stand today. So this would also be an attempt to reconcile all of the conflicts within our ordinance.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the City Council. I think we probably talked about this ad nauseum
at the last planning commission, to some commissioner's chagrin.
Those were the longest minutes I think I've ever
So
read.
I will be brief. There was a lot of items talked about. As Mr. Melling put on the first slide, Kent mentioned, the crux of the question was to change the required materials for these side obscuring fences. Previously, it was limited to masonry, solid composite, and chain link, or this privacy link brand, which is chain link with the slats already inserted from the factory. So the materials appear in different areas throughout the ordinance. As an example, between commercial and residential type developments, it's still required to be masonry. That was chewed on. That was left as it is at the last meeting. So basically, this definition is changing, and it opens it up just about any type of material that you could come up with that's at least 90% side obscuring. Next slide, Kent.
Don, can I ask a question about the percentage? What was the difference between 98% and the 90%? I mean, what was the thinking there? And is that, I don't know. I mean, it's 8%, but I don't know what that really means.
I think that's a good question. That privacy link is something that came about years ago, and they would actually advertise that it is 98% side obscuring. Mm. I think it may be a little difficult as far as the regulatory side. If you come with a fence, and how do I determine if it's 90%?
Correct.
I think there's going to be some subjectivity. You know, hopefully there's not a lot of knots that are missing from the boards.
Yeah.
This is for PUDs. This is the second thing that changed. As we all know, we talked about it a lot. PUDs still require the 6-foot side obscuring fence around the perimeter of the projects. This just strikes masonry and composite, opens it up to other materials, wood, vinyl, et cetera.
I have a question on that one, Don. Why did we have the 10-foot setback for the fence? Is it just so for a PUE, if a PUE goes through there? Or
I think it's PUE, and I also completely believe it's aesthetics. When you put a 6-foot cinder block wall right on the edge of a sidewalk, whether it's, you know, a 5-foot walk or a 10-foot walk, doesn't look very good.
Yeah, but if you have a fence if you also have a 10-foot setback that doesn't get taken care of, then that doesn't look good either, and you end up with 10 feet of weeds before a fence.
You could. That's a nuisance, right?
Yeah, I mean, I pass one every day going home, and they do a pretty good job. I mean, there's times when it's completely covered in weeds, and then they bring somebody out to spray them, and then, because it's all just rock. It's just landscaped in rock of a PUD, and so sometimes it looks good, but sometimes it looks horrible.
That's true. I think there's two that pop in my mind. If you drive down Cross Hollow, along those PUDs,
Sunset Canyon,
you know, you've got that block wall,
yep,
and it's very nice and landscape, makes for a beautiful boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
You go down south towards Black Sage, it's going to be a beautiful neighborhood, but it's very stark, where you have 10 feet of concrete and a 10-foot block wall.
Yep.
That's why it's there. Next slide, please.
Yeah, could I just add, with that 10-foot setback, one of the things that does help us with is site distance, where you do have cross streets or driveways that are near it. So that's a benefit from it that I see from a kind of a traffic engineering standpoint.
Yeah, no, and I thought about that, and I agree with that when you've got your entrances. But sometimes you've just got, you know, hundreds of feet of nothing, no entrances or nothing, and it's...
Yeah. That's true.
In those situations,
it's a waste of land. Right?
Yeah, and it's just kind of, I'm not saying, I was just curious. I figured that was the answer, but I just wanted to find out.
And so the last proposal, I would consider it more cleanup. This is in the engineering standards. It talks about PUDs and industrial next to residential developments. And we had already a conflict where it says fiber on fence, which is a, you know, Trex type product. And we and the commission decided to add this line, basically saying you could do what you want per the definition. As you read this, though, as it stands, it still creates a conflict. Kent and I were talking this afternoon. I, in my opinion, we don't need any of this in the engineering standards. Or we reference back to the zoning ordinance, whatever the zoning ordinance says. That would be my recommendation.
Probably easier just to keep it in one spot, isn't it?
That's,
So if we change it, it's just one spot.
Yeah. So in this case, we're trying to clean up
and make it match the zoning.
Yeah, you can just reference it back.
And then you look at it again, and we missed a conflict. So I think we just get rid of it.
Yeah, just put reference.
Or we can reference back.
So just say 4.6 fences, please see.
Go see the zoning ordinance.
Zoning ordinance.
Zoning and subdivision ordinance. Yeah.
Sounds fine to me.
I would agree that Councilman Melling, when he spoke about the changes necessary in the vinyl, a few years ago, I probably would have not have been in favor of this at all because vinyl products were not what they are today. There's been a lot of change there, and you could have a gusty wind of 45 miles an hour and the fence would be coming down, right? We've seen a lot of changes, I think, in the product over the last few years, and so I think all of the reasons he mentioned, there are some good reasons to have this considered.
Well, and I would hope that ultimately it would help with affordability. I mean, there's a big cost difference between vinyl and block, and having to have put in both personally, I know there's a huge price difference, and so I do hope that it helps with the affordability on some of these projects. I mean,
I do think that we still want to encourage the best construction possible, and I think that goes without saying in all of our developments here in the city for safety of the citizens and the aesthetics of the community. But I think this could be a step forward that might help us along the way, affordability, repairability, if that is such a word. I don't have a problem with this.
All right, thank you.
So this is a public hearing. I'll open the public hearing. Seeing no one, close the public hearing, put that on action.
Yeah, thank you.
Item number 4, consider vesting extension agreement from Fort Cedar, Phase 4.
Good evening, Council. Eric Heaton, representing Fort Cedar Development. I wish I had a pretty colored something to put up there, but I am here. January 23, we got approval for Phase 4 of Fort Cedar. November of 24, we completed them as far as the city's concerned, the water, sewer, gutters, curb and gutter, and pavement. By the time we came in to approve it, we had divesting it had expired. So our request is to extend that to allow us to plat that, to complete that subdivision. All the improvements have been completed and ready to go. But we need to have an extension to allow that to happen.
Mr. Heaton, is what we're looking at on the map, is this all Phase 4?
No,
I just can't. Right. I can't really tell.
So,
on the map.
Yep, from right there. So there's.
You have a pointer right in your hand, Eric.
Yep.
Okay. There you go.
So right here is Phase 4.
And so just to kind of
the perimeter there on the east.
Correct. Yeah.
Show me where we're at. Show me where the current building is that has all the units in it.
Everywhere from there left.
That might be.
It's right about there. Okay. Right
there. Well, actually, it might be here. Oh, is it right there? Okay.
Okay. So this is kind of the U shape that goes.
So we got Phase 2 and then Phase 3 and then Phase 4.
So the road coming into Fort Cedar would be over on the left-hand side of all this.
Be right here coming in.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask the same question that I ask any time we do a vesting, which is to our staff, which is what really has changed between then and between now, you know, because that's really the crux of it for me is, are there things that we need to talk about? You know, if somebody, if staff says, no, nothing's really changed, and that's one thing, but if major things have changed, then that's part of the discussion, in my opinion. So, staff, what has changed between then and now that you can think of?
Right. So the biggest one we noticed, and I mentioned this in the memo that came in your packet, this is one of the two subdivisions that was kind of the impetus for our public improvement avoidance ordinance,
right,
where some creative phase drawing allowed them to avoid putting in some otherwise required public improvements. So if you look at the map as it is here, beyond where the extra lines are, there's kind of a strip that goes along the top end and then along the east end there that is remainder parcel.
Oh, that, on the outside, okay.
Right. It's still owned by the same entity, and it's all part of the same subdivision, but it is not included in a phase. It allows them to avoid putting in master plan roads that were required to be on the east and then on the north side of the property. Also, that remainder parcel under current ordinance would not be allowed. It's too narrow. The change in all of that was the goal of they would be buildable lots. This would be too small to likely build anything. It's my understanding they're going to put shipping containers and use them as storage. So it's not unusable, but it's probably unbuildable.
Or storage units, right?
And so those two parts, they're kind of interconnected, would be prohibited under current ordinance. So if you had to send him back, he'd have to redraw this to, one, put in the road, and two, get rid of that remainder parcel.
So there were a few things. First of all, full disclosure, I rent one of the storage containers on the road, and it's a great spot. Great use for that unusable piece, you know. So, and I talked to Don, our city planner, and with Mr. McKeon about this a little bit. I think this highlights really not... We have a master plan road next to this development, and we've talked about the phase drawing and everything else. But at the end of the day, I disagree that through this industrial area to Kitty Hawk is a good place for a taxpayer-funded huge master planned road. I do think we need to have public access, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, there's a number of ways to modify our ordinance, and we could look to Lehigh City, for example, that has a quite robust for residential and commercial projects, kind of an ordinance that requires development to put in not only, you know, we rely on these master plan roads for public access through an area. And so then everybody wants to move that road because no one wants to build it out. Whereas Lehigh has a lot more interconnected public streets that are a lot smaller, but no one can really get around it because everyone's having to put in little bits at a time. You have a lot more redundancy. You have a lot less cost for a particular project. You have a lot less incentive to avoid it. And then you don't landlock people. You know, given the way this area has been developing, I mean, the city, you know, we didn't want to put it in either. So when we built the dog pound, we made sure that master plan road was moved a little bit to the west so that it kind of hit in the middle of Kitty Hawk instead of closer to the freeway. It's just not a great area there are very few projects, if any, that justify the expense of putting in that road fully for any one property owner for the length of it. So I think that's something we need to address at some point. However, you know, what this really comes down to, I think, you know, after, I don't know, Mr. Eaton, how long you were standing here for Planning Commission, it felt like forever. It was probably approaching an hour, maybe. Hour and 15 minutes. But then after quite some debate over what is or isn't right, one of the Planning Commission members, I can't even remember who, said, wait, so before your vesting expired, you were completely done except for a power line issue. Why are we even having this debate? Like, let's just give you the vesting extension. Because if you guys were really astute and sneaky and wanted to squeeze this in, you could have just done it, right? But you guys were trying to check all the boxes.
Well, in retrospect, we should have just had a letter of credit and platted it. You know, my understanding was that we could start it, finish it, and plat it, and then we'd have the warranty money that we could do. So it was a matter of a couple thousand dollars. We should have just platted like we did the other subdivisions, but we didn't, and so we're here. So,
yeah. And your impact fees, nothing else was going to change, really. This was the crux of it, was the master plan road improvements.
which I don't believe. I believe that came after our approval.
Right.
So it wasn't master plan before that. It was master plan. It switched a couple times. And then the master plan road actually has changed too, like you said, where it goes like this.
And there's quite some discussion in Planning Commission about that as well. Does it really make sense to turn and go the way the master plan is? I just think there's so many issues there that
we... Yeah. And again, the whole purpose of this vesting is in part to make sure that the city infrastructure fees and everything else that we don't get put behind. But we also, we have the time period we do to account for, you know, reasonable and prudent prosecution of your project, right? Are you just kind of sitting around and waiting, or are you really trying to get this project done in the time frame with the expectations that were set with the ordinances that were in place when you were building your project? And I think you guys did that because it was substantially completed by the time before your vesting expired. It was a paperwork issue at this point. So I don't see any public benefit from saying, no, you can't do that. Because at the end of the day, you're never going to put that road in whether we deny you today or not. It's never going to pencil. Never. I don't see it penciling, at least.
That's.
Do we have any kind of a map of where this road goes?
Yeah, can we look at the master plan map real quick?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I think we have a good idea, but let's show it and
just kind of pass through on
a little bit. Benefit. Yeah, and even to the north, do we have where we run that clear through anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is, but this is not what's on the agenda tonight, The question is where do we go with... We need to look at this as a master planned road. And so currently it's a 66-foot wide master planned road. Is that correct?
On the east is a 66-foot. On the north is a 55.
Mm-hmm. So one question that I even have is if we were to, I'm just tossing this out there, if we were to have a different discussion and we reduced it from a 65 to even a 55, does that then make what we're classifying as an unbuildable lot, does that now make it more of a buildable lot because we're adding 10 feet?
I mean, the challenge we have is we have a ditch here next to the freeway. So I don't know. I don't know if that can answer that question.
So they're not.
Yeah, I mean the remainder parcel they've created, even as it sits currently, would not be enough to really build anything on.
Gotcha.
We would shrink that if we went to the full 66, because I think the current right of way is 55 ish. The dirt.
That's a good question. it might.
Gotcha.
Be.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So you'd probably keep it close to the current width that is, but again, they've already created something that doesn't exist.
Well, part of that on the...
We've got this container storage.
But it was done by, I think, BZI did it.
No, it was actually Brindley's here, paved it. It's not improved, but it's...
No, it's not paved. Chip sealed, yes. Essentially.
Well,
no.
Pretty much.
They're just trying to get clean access to their container storage units here. You got BZI up here, who actually has trucks that come up here often.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool that someone built a road that the government didn't make them do?
Do we have any kind of a road
capitalism
in our policy or in our engineering that would just be like a chip sealed road that we would allow without curb, gutter, sidewalk, and all that kind of stuff? No. Do we have that as an option?
No.
No. Okay.
So right here is for the old coke plant. It's not improved.
Yeah. The most in that regard, I guess you could have, is we do have access roads. So if you're trying to get your subdivision to a nearby road, we'll only make you do 26 feet width of asphalt. You can see that as you head up to the golf course. We did that for a section. And that's probably what Mr. Jett would have to do here if we were enforcing that same thing we talked about on your other property. At most, it'd be 26 feet next to the coke plant that's there. And then when you get to his...
Could you go a little further north so we can see how it connects to Kitty Hawk?
I mean, it's...
Oh, it cuts clear across there.
But it's...
So here you got all the
quarries.
The deep, the sand gravel pits.
Yeah.
So you're not going to go this way, but you go this way or this way on this road, which is...
Yeah. Do we have any idea when this was master planned?
Yeah, a landfill, too, is right here.
6-7 years ago, I think.
The rough industrial, right?
It was master planned and taken out and then put back in. And this the other iteration came like this.
Correct.
Which
That's when it changed because
of
that.
To me, it would make more sense because you'd be connecting Bulldog all the way to industrial here where you've already got backed up traffic here and here. I don't know where you're going to go. Why? that would be a good master plan road. But because you can't go north, you just go one and just makes these two busier. So if you were going to go, you'd go this way or you'd go that way if there was a road, or you go on 8th.
If I'm not mistaken, at one time the master plan road did come more directly north.
It did.
When you look at the improvements that were constructed in this area when the overpass was replaced and everything, that that really made that no longer a viable connection, right? From an intersection operation, as well as the road is getting up above grade by the time you get to that point.
Yeah, and if you came through here where the dog pound is, I think you could make that road go like that, and you could go north to south.
So on the last master plan update, when that was done in 22, that was, I believe, when this alignment was selected.
So if we were to say, hey, we want to, I mean, if, so for example, going through that BZI property right there, or would it go on that little piece that's just to the east of, I mean, is that line pretty, I know these lines are usually not super accurate.
If you notice down at the other end, the line goes right through the coke plant, so I think it's a little bit off.
Okay, so it's actually...
You'd probably go, try to go, and I don't know what this is right here, if that's where they built their basketball court or what, but you'd have to go here, through the old landfill.
I mean, I just look at it as, okay, what, one, is it a road that really even needs to exist? I mean, I like being able to get places, but as a person who spends a lot of time in this area, because one of the places where I work is right there, you know, I mean... It's not that much further to just go around and have to come back if you were. It's mostly like it's mostly just to access these businesses that are back there. It's really what these are more access. What I'm actually trying to get at is, sorry, I'll let these two finish talking.
We're listening.
I know. We're looking at a map. So
no, I guess what I'm getting at is, and I don't know if this is even possible, but I think this is kind of similar to what was just recently done in 4B. And tell me, Randall, why the risk of doing what I'm suggesting. What if we went ahead and gave the vesting extension for now, which allows them to push through the final plat, but then put a hold on any building permits until we can come back to have a discussion about what we're actually going to do with this master planned road?
That would kill us.
Because I think there's a discussion about the master planned road that's a whole other discussion we need to have. So we either table this until we have that discussion, or we allow them to keep going forward, and but then have another stopping point later that would allow us to have that. Does that make sense?
So if you stop the project, they don't have to build the road as it currently exists, and you don't get the road anyway. So
yep, I understand that.
And it makes no sense because you have the coke plant, you have the Jenkins, you have everyone going north that where you would potentially widen the road that's already developed. So they're not going to widen it. They're not going to volunteer to widen it.
Well,
it's just a matter of the road going the other way being a master plan, which I don't think it needs to be.
But Jenkins isn't on that side, is it?
No.
They're on the other side of the freeway.
But another thing we have to...
Again, frankly, I think if we if we adjusted our standard, especially in these industrial areas, and maybe I'm a little frustrated because today I had to explain to another property owner that, I mean, it's not a high-dollar business, but they just wanted to put a business on the property that they own, and we're just asking for, you know, what do I need to look out for? And when I explained, well, you've got this master plan trail right here. You've got a master plan 100-foot road to widen. You've got, you know, so for their property, they're like, that's my whole construction budget is those the public infrastructure. I'm like, yeah, sell it to someone else who's going to do something else with the property because it's not going to pencil for you. And so I think especially in these industrial areas, the intention of this master plan road isn't really to divert a whole bunch of traffic off of our other streets. It's
to have access to businesses.
Make sure there's access, and can we? So I don't have a problem with giving you guys your vesting extension, having you move forward, but then we as a city we need to put in a better regulatory scheme than what we're relying on now solely is these master plan roads for interconnectivity and access, and instead have, if our concern is interconnectivity and access, let's have something else that's a proxy for that. And really, in any case, I'd rather we didn't have to pay to upkeep because there's a lot of heavy trucks on this road, and we're not going to collect enough taxes to pay to maintain it.
Does the old coke plant touch this road as well?
Yes. It's on
so if somebody was to... The other reason I'm just thinking about this is because, I mean, they've recently done quite a bit of work there. and they've recently put it on the market. And so if there was ever a time where a new property owner or a new tenant was to pull a building permit to try to do something, that time is coming quickly, I would think. They would do it when they newly acquire that. And so I would just like to see us have this conversation with the discussion of what we're doing with the road at the same time. And unfortunately, they're not both on this agenda. So I guess that's what I'm trying to get at, is how do we bring those two conversations to be this, at the same time?
Well, it's impossible to put it where it is without even having a discussion, because it goes through the Koch plan.
No, it's off on the map is what he's saying. It's off on the map.
The rendering is off about 50 feet.
Yeah, it actually goes to the
east. This is an unimproved access road.
Okay, so
we agree that access road needs to be preserved. We have no problem with that. In fact, we have this property around the edge, you know, for the purpose of storage units, you know, whether they're improved or containers. But that's why we have that right there, and we feel like that's a good use of it. Especially we have these storage units here.
They're down the road.
We think it's going to be a best use for that property, which is another reason why we did it.
What is the distance between your phase four and the remainder of the property? Is it 40 feet, 50 feet? What is it?
65.
5 feet?
55.
Oh, 55.
And it is large enough to develop a building on there, because you have zero setback in that zone. You can still have the 20-foot setback off the road.
So you could do a 30-foot deep building.
If, for example, on Coal Creek, you have those storage units you can just drive right up to. They're paved up to it.
Yeah.
That's the idea. You can just drive right up to
it. Well, I'd like it much better in your location than where it is on Coal Creek, so I'd much prefer that.
And we have no problem saying this. If we ever develop that remainder piece with the
that we would develop.
You need to come to the microphone, Mr. Jett.
Thank you.
I'm starting to sound like other people. Tom Jett. We have no problem if we ever develop that remainder parcel to work with the city to develop that accordingly. But we want to do it in conjunction with the whole project, when everybody does it, instead of just bits and pieces and bits and pieces.
When you say everybody, who are you talking
about?
Well,
I'm talking.
What you got?
I'm talking this all the way down.
Oh, I see. You're talking about the road.
This here.
But you know it would never happen all at once.
Well, I'm aware of that. Yeah.
But it's going to affect all of them.
Are we ever going to ask BZI, who doesn't need a building permit, they use that as a storage yard. They don't ever have a reason to.
Well, when they build their new corporate headquarters and everything, they'll probably vacate that area anyway.
I don't think so.
They own it.
Yeah, I don't know what they'll do, you know. That's speculative. We don't know.
So, Randall, is there a way to bring these two conversations into one conversation, or do we just need to? That's where I'm at. I mean, I'm not saying no or yes. I would just like to see these as two separate. It'd be a lot easier for me to say, that's now an access road, so we don't really. Access road doesn't have to have the curb, gutter, sidewalk, so give them the vesting, because now they're not going against our other ordinance that says they have to do it.
So the answer is yes, you can bring them in alignment, but we'd need to go through the process of amending the master plan to do that, which will take time. As you recall, we put in those provisions to intentionally make that take a little longer, notify all the neighbors, so that we're not changing the master plan just on a whim.
As I recall, Councilman, you're the one that was pushing for that.
Well, and I still stand by that, but
I know I get it.
I would just like to see them as two separate discussions. For me, I actually think the idea is it's no longer a master planned road, and so that would then make me feel a lot better about by giving the vesting, extending the vesting, so that's now not going against another ordinance we have, though, also that says, hey, you need to put in all these improvements, because we no longer require those improvements.
If you recall as well, we ran into a similar issue with this on up next to Old Farm, phases 2 through 4. It was a 100 East was a 100-foot wide master plan road that the council didn't think was going to stay that way. We did a deferral agreement instead to allow the plats to come in and get that modified, so that we kind of kicked the can down the road until we got to the right procedure to fix that.
So you have all the bullets. I don't know how you're ever going to get around here.
The other thing I would note for you, too, is there are two questions here. One is the master plan road. The other one is the depth of those lots, of the remainder.
Well, and
you can split those issues. You can say both are fine, both are not, or say one's okay and one's not.
And I guess with the depth of the lots, again, that's the goose they cooked. So I'm not as worried about that, right?
And our intention, we put that in there, was to try and get the master plan improvements.
Right. It was a proxy for the master plan, right? Because developers for many years had voluntarily given up usable land when the project wasn't going to pencil, right? So so if that's, and that's the regulatory scheme that was in existence when they did it, if that's what they want to stick with, that's fine. So I don't have an issue with that at all. It's really the, now, the way this plat is drawn, the way I read it, if they get the vesting extension and record this, there's nothing in there that's going to preclude a public use of that road in the future. It doesn't extend into that roadway, correct? So it's not like we're giving up a right-of-way. It's really just the unusability at this stage.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, in the end, if that road needs to widen later, they wouldn't have any structures on it that couldn't be moved.
Right. So you know, with that, I don't see a problem with granting the extension. Then we have the wider discussion about the road, because again, whether we hold them up or not, unless suddenly storage units or any other industrial use is a lot more lucrative, you're never going to have it pencil out to build the road. So.
And so, Randall, when we talk about a buildable lot, I mean, did we decide, is there a definition? Do we have a number that we ended on what a buildable lot is? Because to what he says... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What you're building.
Yeah.
Some of that, yeah. If you're truly going for what a buildable lot is, yeah, it depends on the zone. So certain, obviously, residential zones are very well defined.
Correct.
Industrial, not so much. When we were doing it under our definitions, we required them to be at least 200 feet.
Deep,
200 feet deep. That was the.
Now again, I want to specify that is only for simple minor lots. We didn't put it for all lots, and so its applicability here is limited. But it makes it harder for any other future phase to come in when we've made it difficult to use it. Now they've indicated, what did you say, 55?
Correct.
Is how deep it is. If you took another 10 feet, because it would all have to come from their side, because it's I-15 on the other side, you'd be potentially shrinking down to 45. So it is one of those that even if you grant an extension, somebody, whether them or us, should bring this back to discuss that master plan road, because it would take difficult to use property and make it even more difficult to use. In fact, that might even make your shipping containers difficult.
It'd make a 40-footer for sure impossible, but you might be able to get a 20-footer in there still.
Yep, 25 extra.
Because they have a zero setback, right, on the back.
Mm-hmm.
On the west side. Yeah,
and part of the difficulty is some of those, and you mentioned it for Coal Creek, people are bringing in U-Hauls and blocking the street.
As a person who rents one of those units, those are the best units in Cedar, in my opinion, because when you have to back your 30-foot boat into one of those, you have all the access in the world. You don't have another building blocking you, so it's easier to back stuff into them. So.
Yeah, see, so these are great.
Mr. Heaton, in phase four, as it's laid out, as you pointed to us, what is the plan there? Just more buildings, similar to what you've already built?
Correct. Yeah, so if you go in, I mean, some people live in them now. Randy and Tori Forsyth, they live in their unit that they bought.
Oh, so is this kind of like the man cave concept that we had permitted some time ago?
I mean, theirs is, a building that they live in, yeah, so I guess, yeah. It
would okay.
A lot of them have, you know, their garage condos where they do their hobbies. Some mm-hmm. of them have created duplexes where they rent them out to businesses. So it's, that more of that type is what we would, you know, build or sell lots for.
Well, I guess we'll put it on action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we all understand all the options here, but.
All right. You agree? Action?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Item number five, consider a vesting extension agreement for Fiddler's Canyon Hills, phase 4-10.
And before he jumps in, we told you we'd update you on Planning Commission because they addressed this last night, so it didn't make it into your packets. They did give a positive recommendation, but they made a bit of a tweak to the timelines. So what was given to you said there was no more than 3 years in between from the previous final plat being recorded to the next one being applied for, but a 15-year total max window. Their recommendation was changing that to 2 years and not having a max window, because that would have put it down to about 10 years anyway. But mathematically, that's what you probably would average out to, is up to potentially 10. I would emphasize, in case it wasn't clear, they have finished phases 1 through 3. They've been recorded, and they've submitted 4 and 5, and those are the ones that ran into this hiccup. So there's really only 5 phases left for them to submit for. So don't think there's 7 times 2. It's more like 5 times 2.
Mm-hmm. And this was really, in my reading, nothing else had changed other than the requirement for the third-party water modeling.
Water and sewer modeling.
Water and sewer, sorry.
And I don't want to speak for Kent, but they looked through all the modeling concepts, all the ones we normally require. Those are the only two that city staff had some concerns that we might be getting to a point that we could have some concerns about. Does it have enough capacity? And that is kind of what the concept was, as we discussed in the Planning Commission as well, is, you know, every pipe has a limited capacity, and if we have something like this in here that gets to vest, we are holding space for them.
Mm-hmm.
How long are we willing to hold that space for them that might prevent somebody else from coming in without having to upsize?
But this, if I remember correctly, it's been a while. This project, and one of the reasons I hear complaints all the time, all the high-density infillers, but the high-density, like, I don't remember this council approving new high-density infillers that conflicted with the master plan in a long time. Like, it's been master planned and in our infrastructure plans for quite some time to have 24 units per acre in this area of fiddlers, correct?
It's been zoned R3 for a long time. I'm not sure about the master plan designation, but it had the actual zoning designation for R3 for quite some time.
Right. So, I mean, our master plan should have been holding that space anyway, right? And my understanding, again, I don't know, you get into legislative intent sometimes, right? But when we were talking about modeling requirements and everything else, I understand now why we want that in all the new subdivisions. But really, what I had envisioned when we did that was only for anyone who was asking for more units than the master plan, because the master plan already accounted for all the existing densities. And even in high density, it's accounting for 24 units per acre, which no one ever does. So, so I have a hard time even thinking, you know, really, we passed an ordinance that requires things that have been planned a certain way for so long to still be modeled and show the capacity when, in theory, I mean, that's what we're paying these consultants for every few years. So anyway, and so I did think the 15 years and 3 years was a little bit much of an ask, so I'm glad I haven't watched the hearing last night, so I'm glad to hear that. I like that. That's really closer to what I would think is the 2 year between phases, not to exceed, well, and as a practical matter, that's not to exceed 10. I think that's great.
When was the last plat of the last phase? Do we know?
I think we recorded in like January or something. It really wasn't that recent. Long ago.
So I'd like to hear from you.
Thank you. Steve Kamilowski with Brown Consulting Engineers. Randall explained it pretty well. Our master plan that we've had for this whole project came in a little over 2 years ago. We had our preliminary plat approved, and as we've been working through the phases, getting plan approval through city engineering, it was brought to our attention that the way the code's currently written is our preliminary plat is about to expire, and so we just want to be able to continue our plan and work through our phases. There's no way the owner would be able to finish all 10 phases in 2 years.
Correct.
So they wanted to try. We want to present something that's reasonable. And Randall, and we had discussion at Planning Commission last night about this, is 2 years from the last recorded phase would be the time limit. So if nothing is recorded in that 2-year time, then the
then it starts over.
It would expire.
Yep.
But we have every intent to continue through all 10 phases. There's no intent to hold anything, or we want to proceed as quickly as plan reviews and as we can get through it.
The only other question I have is just a matter of process. Is there's nothing in here that changes any of the rules when it comes to impact fees or any of like permit fees, anything like that. It's really just the subdivision modeling, correct?
Well, I mean, and the way it's written is they would vest with every normal vesting right they would have from that vicinity plan. Mm-hmm. So they don't get all the benefits that come with that because it's not a completed plan. I mean, if you look at the vicinity plan I provided to you, I think phase of 9 are just marked as phase of 9 and 10. They're,
correct.
There's not a building drawn in there.
Nothing in there.
So they can't vest in something that wasn't ever approved. But in any area that, yes, was already expected, already done, a completed application was in, yeah, they'll potentially vest.
We don't intend to change anything that was on that preliminary plat that was previously approved. There's a lot of open space in those phase 10 areas that will remain open space. It's too steep to build on anyways.
The question on fees and impact fees, they typically don't vest until you come and pay the fee.
Until the building permit phase going vertical, correct?
What they're vesting in is the engineering standards and the zoning and subdivision standards. Whenever they pay the impact fee to build the particular building, that's what they're going to pay for impact fees is what we have on the books at the time.
As I recall, and I may be off on this, but phases 4 and 5, didn't phase 5 take us further to the south and sort of the west?
Yes.
So will that complete then the improvements on Fiddler's Canyon Road? Because you've done portions of it. I just want to know when that final connection is going to be done for.
I think they're done.
Are they?
Phase 4, I think. Actually, I think phase 1, they bonded for it is why it's not complete yet. Phase 1, actually, I think went all the way.
They got curb and gutter all the way down.
Yeah, I don't have the maps in front of me.
Do they? Are you sure?
Mm-hmm. Pretty sure.
I think phase 1 was the full Fiddlers.
I'll drive it and check it out.
That was
one of the things I'm concerned about with all the flooding and the storm drain problems we've had. And
They were doing some work on their detention pond, which is on the west side of their project. And they were also, they had some road cuts going, so they got to fix that stuff. But I think they're...
Yeah, right there, because there's phase 5.
Yeah.
I think they tied into those condos next door.
Yeah, if phase 1, that whole frontage road was supposed to be improved. But they did bond. The owners did bond for those improvements.
So the vicinity plan was approved in 22. So are we really – so we're quite a ways over. Because isn't it within 2 years of the vicinity plan, or is it 2 years?
So there's two-year clocks. And the one we're dealing with here is from vicinity plan to applying for a final plat.
But the initial ones take a lot longer when you're developing a whole subdivision, though. So now the general.
Yeah, but I'm saying so the 2-year clock really ran out quite a while ago. That original, because the vicinity plan, it says, was approved in 22.
Correct.
So it was actually last year that this. Am I understanding that correctly? Because he's saying it's about to expire. What's about to expire? Because what I'm seeing is it expired. If you go up, Kent, to the dates.
Was March 9th or something like that?
Keep going.
Yeah, I show it in my memo. It was approved by council on March 9th of 2022, so it expired March 9th of 2024.
Correct.
And so phases 1 through 3 were submitted within that window, and they didn't realize there was a different standard for CEDAR. Some cities literally just follow and copy the state one, which is reasonable diligence. And it doesn't really set standards. Other cities are like us and set actual standards as this is our time frame, what we think that is. That kind of caught them off guard.
Okay, so they applied for final plat on 1 through 3 before that March 9th, 2024 date.
Correct.
So now they're going to apply for final plat
4 and 5.
4 and 5, and now they're past that deadline.
Correct.
Okay.
But within the 2 years that the Planning Commission recommended.
So for me, the biggest question, and I come back to what Councilman Melling was saying, is did we as a city sort of set aside, if you will, the understanding on those water and sewer rights? Because if not, modeling might be appropriate, because there's a lot of units here. This is a big project. And I just want to make sure that, I mean, I have a brother that lives up in Fiddler's Canyon, and he's already complaining about water pressure up there. So I just, I want to make sure that we have taken care of the rest of the citizens that live up in that area as well.
So it's difficult when you do a master plan, you take a snapshot of an area in a period of time, and as we've seen, those snapshots never hold true. They change and they move, and the land use changes and expands and decreases, and it moves all over the board. So to say that that snapshot is going to reserve capacity in perpetuity for any given project is very difficult for me to understand when everything else around it changes. We still have infrastructure that's sized the way it is, and if we have to model it to make sure that we can hit the capacity that we need to serve them, I think it's important that we do that beforehand, even if they had this master plan a long time ago.
The other thing that I would note as well is master plan is what we're intending to build. It's not always what we have built. And so if you have, for example, some of the north end, the sewer line master plan is not to that spec yet. It is smaller by dimensions than what our master plan is asking for. So once it's all in, yeah, it will provide what the general plan probably is asking for. But if it's still at a narrower, you know, diameter, it can't yet. When we were doing the development agreement for the residential density one further north from this one, more or less along the freeway, that was one of the questions. The master plan was going to allow for almost everything, but we knew the sewer line wasn't in, and we knew the water wouldn't cover them entirely. And so that was part of the agreement, is that that would have to be done before we let them build, even though the master plan was probably already adequate. We just didn't have the infrastructure yet. So that is a separate consideration, is whether the infrastructure is yet ready. It's only planned for.
So what stance does engineering have on this, Kent? I mean, is engineering, what would staff's recommendation be as far as the modeling or the vesting extension?
Yeah, so on the, I don't think we have a problem with the vesting extension per se. There are a couple of provisions of this, the way it's drawn up, that we have concerns about. We were very concerned about the 15 years that was noted in here and 3 years between phases. That was addressed by the Planning Commission. We're much more comfortable with where that went in the Planning Commission conversation. The other part we do have some heartburn with is this, where they're saying that the city would agree that the vesting extends to the modeling, to where there would be no modeling required. That we have a hard time with. As Randall kind of mentioned, modeling is really looking at two different things. One, we all, do we have the right-sized master planned facilities to accommodate what they're now proposing that may be different from what were the assumptions of the original modeling? But the other very important part of that is, can we serve them without some off-site improvements being made, right? And so that we don't know just from what was done in the master plan modeling. That really is a project-by-project deal there. And so that's why we really have some heartburn with that number three right there. We don't think that should be included in the agreement.
And we do have different modeling now than we did back when this vicinity plan was done, correct?
When the vicinity plan was done, the city was still doing what the city could on limited amount of staff time available to do some modeling in-house. That we were not able to do that to the level that we're able to do with consultants.
What kind of, so if someone has, how many units in phase five, for example?
In phase five, I believe there's, 30
ballpark.
Units or so.
30 units.
Yeah.
So if you have 30 units, how much do they need to pay the consultants to do the modeling for those 30 units? And what's the consultant's turnaround time lately? I know we were struggling with.
Yeah,
with some of them in the past. I don't know what we're at now.
Yeah, we've had better turnaround from some of the consultants than others. The water, which is one of our real big concerns on this, that turnaround has been fairly good with that modeling consultant. We struggled a little bit with some of the others on the turnaround time, to be honest.
Do you know cost? Are we looking at, like, 500 per unit, you know, 500 for a whole phase. It's been a while since I looked into that.
From what I have seen of the ones that I've actually seen what that cost is, it seems like they've been anywhere between 2,000 to 5,000, depending on how involved it is, how big it is, and how, and what the impacts are in the system that need to be looked at. I think that's about where we've been. I've seen some that have been down close to 2,000, but I know we've had some others that have been up more around 5.
So you can take out a couple trees per unit to cover the cost.
I would like to point out that we did do modeling originally, showing how much demand mm-hmm. our subdivision will need and create. The owners wanted to have me mention that the studies that we did originally haven't changed. We still have the same number of units. So the amount of flows that we will generate or demand isn't changing. I think it's just the downstream city infrastructure that I think is the question still. And the owners wanted me to mention that or ask the question, doesn't the impact fees that they pay for the building permits pay for, like, city master?
You would think, right? Because it's not going to get built any other way.
Yeah. So they, in their mind, the studies that they've already had done by a licensed engineer shows the demand, which won't change. Another engineer would come up with the same numbers that we've already come up with. They would just probably further study the downstream city infrastructure impacts. And the owners asked me to, or in the owner's opinion, they thought it was in the city's responsibility to study off-site capacities. Just use the numbers that our subdivision is our.
Yeah, but the downstream stuff is coming from your development. I mean,
in
yeah,
part,
you're right.
And others.
Yeah, and others. Sure. And that's why we charge them impact fees.
Yeah.
And
yes.
The
we don't deny there is impact. It's just how far downstream do the studies that we are responsible for.
Do you know, and I know this gets a little technical, but I just want to understand how this works. So when you look at water demand, for example, right, peak demand flow for a single unit is a given number,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But if you're looking at the aggregate of several units, then that demand per unit goes down because odds are all those units aren't, you know, and there's charts in the plumbing
code.
Yeah,
not every unit is peaking at the
when,
same time.
When we look at subdivision phases, do we look at that, at those additional units on their own as an aggregate or like just that subdivision, or do we look at them, you know, say all of the units in the vicinity, say we've got 1,000 housing units that are on, you're adding 50 to that. Now we're looking at the demand of 1,050 units rather than, you know, an additional 50 units on their own in the modeling, because that would drastically overestimate demand as well if that's the case. Could you speak to that, Kent?
Yeah, so what, I mean, when we have that modeling done, that modeling consultant is pulling up the existing model that has all the stuff that's already gone through the process and adding in the additional. So yes, it would be modeled based on, you know, what the new aggregate demand
new
is.
New aggregate, not the standalone new phase.
Correct.
Okay, that's good. And I don't know, this is kind of dumb, maybe, I don't know, but I can see the justification for wanting some modeling, but I struggle with requiring it at every phase. Could we perhaps ask that they do a one-time modeling update for all their units, and then if it lapses later because they're not submitting their stuff within the timelines we've submitted, then so be it?
I could see where they would. I can see where a developer would be hesitant to do downstream sewer modeling. Downstream water modeling makes no sense because nobody cares about downstream water, right? It just gets to your place. So the water modeling's got to be from the tank to the units.
Yeah.
I would think a developer would want to know if they would be able to serve their units with water. It makes them vastly more sellable. I think it's in the city's interest to know that downstream sewer information, because I don't want to find out that that their flow exceeded our capacity when we back up houses down in the Sunbow. That's the worst way to find out about that.
Yeah, it's a crappy situation.
Yeah, all around.
But now I would much rather see if we're requiring modeling, because you're doing tiny phases, and I realize, you know, that's because of the changes in subdivision rules, financing, everything else, right? You don't want to pay 8%+ interest on improvements that are going to take years to absorb and build out, right? Yeah. So, but I would say, rather than not requiring any modeling at all, can we just have all the modeling for all their future phases and be done just all at once? So it's kind of a...
Depends on how long you string it out.
Yeah, but would you run into the same problem like we are now? We did modeling just a little over 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And would this conversation come up again in 2 years that we...
Yeah.
We did modeling.
Yeah, that's fair.
If it's 8 years from now, is this model still valid? Good?
Well,
yeah.
Because engineering modeling is a good tool, but it's not infallible.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
I just... And... If we require modeling, I just don't want anyone to complain, because I see the dollar amount, I see the time, I see the units. If they complain about the aesthetics of your future phases, I mean, that adds up pretty darn quick. And, you know, just a few, even $600 a unit, that usually comes in fascia and, you know, kind of the decor on the outside, because you have a lot of fixed costs.
Yeah. I guess my question would be the concern with modeling, is it more the cost, whatever that is, or is it the anticipation of what might be found out in the model?
It's mostly time, and it's secondly cost. The city review has stopped their review until we provide updated modeling. Mm-hmm. It won't review it anymore. And so until we can all agree, we can't proceed with our plan reviews. That was one of our review comments, was provide new modeling.
Okay.
You could also potentially split it in that way if you're thinking of an extension. Allow 4 and 5 to go through and require modeling before they get to 6. I mean, you could do something like that allows them to proceed forward with what they have. So time is no longer the problem. Still a cost.
Yeah.
But you could solve one of their two problems.
So as the ordinance is written now, would it require modeling at every final plat?
Yeah, that's exactly what
they're saying. Or is it at vicinity for the whole project?
I think we have some discretion, don't we?
I believe so, yes.
Because I'm wondering if we need to I'm wondering if we need to create, and I don't know if it's an ordinance or a standard or whatever, that says if you have a development that involves, you know, over a certain number of, you know, plats or phases, that it's either, you know, we do split it up. So you do one in the beginning and one halfway through or whatever it might be.
But that's not always the touchstone on when we need modeling done. There's areas in town where we know infrastructure is strained, and it might be a small subdivision that comes in, and we would ask them to model the downstream or upstream flows.
Sure.
Because we know the strained infrastructure in that area.
These guys
just happen to have a large project.
I'm just talking about for a large project. I don't know if it doesn't make sense to do it all at once, because it could take 10 years and modeling could change. Well, but I also don't know if you need to do it every single phase.
Well, but I think their phases, I don't know this, but you brought in 4 and 5 this time. You'll probably bring in 7 and 8
Correct.
Or 7, 8,
Correct.
And 9 or whatever it is the next time.
Well, and 9 and 10 are not.
But I like what Randall suggested is
me too.
Let them move forward on 4 and 5, because we do have modeling that's just only over 2 years old. It's not like we're talking about 20-year-old modeling here.
Well, if you folks are okay, I would suggest that we put this on action and move forward to next week.
Of course.
And I guess our direction to staff in preparing that agreement going forward to that meeting, let's take the Planning Commission's recommendation on the timeline.
Yeah.
Let them move forward on the phases 4 and 5 without modeling required in the future, and that you guys can factor in the timeline and take out some trees if you need to.
Don't take out trees. Just find the extra money.
Yeah. Say that first.
He did that on purpose.
I will draft it accordingly for next week.
That'll work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Item number 6, consider vesting extension agreement for Ironcrest Phase 3.
Okay. All right. Peachy.
On which one?
Oh. Yeah, you can.
You can talk. There's not a public hearing, but
you can come
to the mayor.
It's a work meeting. We let anybody talk about anything here. Including you.
Phil Schmidt, in reference to modeling, when we built our project over here at Amber, we had to model all the storm drain, and that's one word that's not mentioned up there on their deal is they've got water, they have sewer, But a huge issue is storm drain, and that is not even mentioned, and it needs to be, because most likely now the storm drain in that area is under capacity.
Well, it's
way over.
The difference is on this one, they had to privately keep it all. They had to build their own big basin on this one. It's all private infrastructure.
It's not there yet.
Right. It's getting there.
Yeah, it isn't there yet. And I see their pipes coming out, their 30-inch pipes that actually don't go into the other pipe. They basically go into the curb, and then whatever doesn't drain out of the bottom drains down into it. Mm-hmm. But modeling is very important. Your water system, your sewer system, and your storm drain. We had to model all three, and I'm not saying they're always right the first time. When the first time the consultant modeled our project, we had quite a long discussion about it. So there's things that you can look at, things you can review. We tweaked it with staff, went over it, and made some adjustments. But the other part is that I think, on our project, we didn't have a storm drain system to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Our whole project was no place to drain. And so we had to do something to get it to drain. And that's what we did. On these projects, they're draining, they're using city services. So to me, their model would be fine, but we as a city, or you as a city, must know at that point in time what that system can take. And that, to me, that's a city thing. The city needs to have that. They need to know, say, okay, this developer's coming in, we can take so many thousands of gallons. I tell you right now, the system in Fiddler's Canyon and down through that way, the sewer system is getting pretty well maxed out. But to me, that would be, a city should know what they could take. Is it the city's job to model for the developer? No. But the developer models his project, and the city, then they see what they can take, and they compare those numbers. And if they can take it, then so be it. But that's only at that point in time, because if anybody else does a project, then that changes, because the city capacity is now changing.
Yeah.
So modeling is important, but I think the city should model. The city needs to know what they can take, both water, sewer, and storm drain, and traffic. All four of those are important. So modeling is a big deal. I really don't care what it costs. Okay, I don't care about the money. If you don't model and you don't know what you're getting, then you're getting a lot of trouble. Anyway, just a little thought.
Thank you.
All these vesting things tonight, jeez. Number six, Mayor.
Yeah, number six, consider vesting extension agreement for Iron Crest Phase 3.
Mike Adamson, Iron Crest. We're looking for that vesting extension. We're pretty much done with the project. We haven't made any changes to the initial plan that we've done here, and so we just want to be able to finish it up and be done. So.
And the infrastructure's already there. The road's built, the curb and gutter. It's just ready to put houses on it, so it's not like it's just fresh. And
did this one have any changes in ordinance? Mm-hmm.
I don't believe so, no. And you did approve a vesting extension on Phase 2 last summer. And then, we're just trying to finish it up with an extension on this one to get it done.
Has this one already passed the timeline, or is it coming up and we're hitting it before?
It was
well passed.
Yeah.
Well, this is off 3900.
Yeah. That's when the vicinity plan expired.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of it, we held off. We'd have done the complete subdivision initially, but we were having, as Phil was talking about, we had a lot of problems with the drainage because there was nothing there. So we postponed the Phase 2 and 3 until we could get some kind of decision on that, and that's why we didn't finish it on the front end. We'd have just done it all then. So
one question I have, in a situation like this with our new 3900 West reimbursement area, How does that fall into play, Randall? Does the vesting fall back to the old, which means he would pay him as he pulls building permits? Or when we give final plat now, do we collect it on the entire plat, on the entire phase?
And I apologize. Let me clarify what I said before.
You had talked about from vicinity to final plat. So in this case, if I understand it correctly, the final plat has been, Clay at least has signed off on it. Have we all signed off on it upstairs?
Yeah, we're good with the plat. It's just to get it recorded.
So this is the second 2-year clock that they've missed. It's been approved. They haven't gotten it recorded in the 2 years. So any fees have either already been paid or are vested. There will be no additional fees added to this.
The water infrastructure is already there.
Well, but this one they will, because
that's a new fee that we have added since their plat was actually approved. They're at the final stage. Like, all they have to do is bond whatever's left,
the water's
or warranty,
there, the sewer's there,
and then we record.
Because I thought we wrote it in a way, though, that if you already have your plat approved, when you go to pull a building permit.
Yes. When they get to a building permit, any of those, that's when the fee would kick in. It would not be at the final plat, but it would be at building.
So whenever he pulls every single one of these building permits, they'll have to get paid.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the way I understand it, too, on the new ones. I think we're talking about the water.
Yeah. For the 3900 West extension or, yeah. Okay, that's fine. I mean, so this is the second year one that was missed. The other two were the first one.
Right, so this is more akin to Mr. Jett's in that regard, where everything's approved. They just, it's sitting in my office waiting to get recorded.
I don't have any questions on this.
No.
So when did that one expire? Or was that the same one?
That's the one I'm talking about. So the timeline they were supposed to get it recorded was June 22nd of last year.
Oh, okay.
So we're almost exactly 1 year late at this point.
How long of an extension on this one?
December, I think they've never done.
Yeah, they pushed. The Planning Commission gave a positive recommendation until December 31st of this year.
Okay, so pretty short.
He only asked for September, but Mr. Jett was kind in his motion and put it December 31st.
Can we put that on consent and have at least one thing on the consent agenda?
Yes, there's an agreement, so yes.
That's one. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I think it's probably a done deal. Yours is done. Item number 7, consider bids for the Martin Flat Well Test Well Drilling Project. Mr. Stathis.
Jonathan Stathis, City Engineering Department. We received the bids back on Friday afternoon, and I apologize they weren't in the original packet. They were sent out to you, I believe, on Tuesday.
Were they? I don't remember seeing them. Did we get those sent to us?
I don't.
You got an update.
We did? I didn't see it. All right, it doesn't matter. They're in front of us now.
We received 6 bids. The low bidder was Mike's Drilling out of Tucson, Arizona. You'll see 2 tables here. One is the base bid, and the second table is the base bid plus the what we call the additive alternate bid items. Mike's Drilling is the low bidder on both of these tables. The add alternate bid items included abandoning the existing well that was drilled 2 years ago, and then it also includes what we call NMR logging, which is a special logging tool that gets sent down into the hole, and they can, or into the borehole, and they can tell where the water is in the well, which is what we want to find out. Talking to our consultant today, they said the one good thing, or a really good thing about that, is that it can tell the difference between water that's just seeping through the formation and water that's coming through the fractures. And that's really what we want to find is those fractures in the sandstone.
And that's what that nuclear magnetic resonance is?
Yes.
Resonance. Could you tell us, resonance? Just for understanding, what does it mean when you abandon a well? What do we have to do?
You have to cap it.
Just cap it?
They grout it. Well, they actually fill it up.
They do?
It with grout, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So do these prices include us abandoning that? Are they going to do that for us?
The second table does include that.
Does include that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. The one you're looking at right now doesn't include that.
So it's inclusive of the first table and the alternate.
Yes.
So have we ever
used or even heard of Mike's or Energy Services LLC?
I have not personally worked with them before.
Or even any of the first three I've never heard of. I've heard of the other three, but
I have heard of them. They've the first two have been on, they've been on city projects previously. I did talk to several references today for Mike's Drilling. They've done a lot of wells in Arizona. They have not done very much. They've only done one in Utah. But they do have a current Utah well driller's license.
And they and I assume, you know, as staff, all of these are qualified bids. They all have the bonding capacity and everything else, correct?
They all provided their bid bond, and right. So they would have to provide their full bonding in order to have the agreement signed. The references were all good. It sounded like they have newer equipment. There was one well that went down to 1,500 feet. So it sounds like, from everything I'm hearing, everything looks good.
I guess that's one question. Have any of them drilled a well down to 2,100 feet before?
Like I said, the only one I know of is the one down to 1,500. I didn't specifically.
And that was Mike's that did have one at 1,500?
Yes.
Energy Services told me under previous another bidding that they did, they go deep and they would go there. It's just his word. He just said, I want to go deep. I that's what I do is go deep.
But I did talk to the owner of Mike's Drilling. His name's Mike Lister, and it sounds like he said he can meet all the specifications that we have. It seemed like it was a problem. So.
And there's not a knowledge gap that we know of with any. I mean, they know that they're up in the canyon drilling through who knows what. Pretty deep, correct?
We provided all that information. Okay. Yes. We provided all the reports and studies and everything.
So. Yeah, and we do have a little bit better data than we did before. So.
And we provided.
And I'm sure they did their homework too and looked at sites and
And we provided the well log from what Jay Grimshaw had done 2 years ago. So yeah, they had all the information. So
okay,
so everything looks good. The pricing looks good in terms of our budget. We were looking at moving some of the money from Martin's Flat to the Neptune Meters project, but this is well within.
Right. You know, I feel a lot better about this given these bids.
Because we had 1.9 million, and we moved how much? 300 or 400 of it to the
300 something.
300, so we kind of had 1.6-ish.
Could you remind me, Jonathan, what was our budget for this?
Well, we had 1.9 originally, and then we were going to move some to Neptune.
I think we moved about 400,000.
Yeah, but we were still thinking up to 1.3, 1.4, somewhere in that range.
I mean, our estimate was about 1 million just for the test well. So.
Right.
So yeah, it's quite a bit less than even what our cost is.
No, it's
cost
good.
Estimate.
Yeah, no,
this guy's qualified. This is good.
This makes me feel a lot better about the project.
Is it 1.9? Yes.
Can we put this on consent, you guys?
I'm okay putting this on consent. There's no.
Are you guys okay in putting this on consent?
Yes, we are. Yes.
Mayor, I move to put this on consent.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you.
Time to go home. Maybe.
Turn right.
Item number 8.
Exit the doors.
Public hearing to consider a resolution for the revision of the 24-25 fiscal year budgets.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. Tonight we are just buttoning up the last of the 24-25 budget. The budget revision forms were in your packet. I was going to say that the department directors could answer any questions, but I'll do my best.
Since they're not here.
Unless it's legal, admin, or engineering, that's about all we're getting.
So if you have any questions.
Let's see.
I don't remember having questions going through this one.
I don't either, but can we just run through them real quick?
Yeah, there you go.
So, that's just the pass-through fund.
That's the pass-through for...
Okay, so no questions there.
Yeah. CDBG's pass-through money, we get it from the state, and we pass it right through to... Mm-hmm. The Housing Authority, redevelopment, that's some state grant money for the Main Street program.
Keep going.
It's just overtime and that's reconciles.
Now, what kind of firearm did we get for $86? Because
I think it was a super soaker of some sort.
It was a Nerf gun.
A $2 pistol.
I think it was a Nerf gun.
Nerf gun. Practice.
And this is all.
If you can scroll down a little more, Kent, there's an explanation on this one. No, back up. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yep, this is. I didn't have any issues with
this.
We're
just cleaning this up. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, keep going.
Oh, same, similar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This was from them doing their
wildland.
This is wildland activity.
Wildland, yeah, stuff.
Similar, yeah.
Okay.
Mike has a lot of cleanup issues.
We won't tell him you said that.
That's okay. I tell him that all the time.
Looks good there. Okay with that. Rick Cruz.
This is to make sure we have all the money that was actually intended to go to the
Cross Hollow
Arena actually in a live budget that we can spend.
Okay.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. No issues here. This one. Well, outlay, wreck.
Again, it's Cross Hollows.
Yeah. Yep, that's fine. That one was fine.
Jared wanted to tidy up his budget a little bit. He had some special department, seed and fertilizer. Oh, yeah, the golf course got beat up this winter because it got played on every day.
It was in terrible shape.
So they had to spend more money on food.
They played all
basically
winter.
Golf course
yeah,
food.
Yeah, they played it on the whole winter.
To feed
all
the
winter.
Grass.
Yeah.
Ken Nelson with Leisure Services. I'm filling in for Jared. He's out of town. But so they did in November through March. They did $233,000 in green fees, golf carts, and driving range. So it was not; it was an unusual winter, which leads to unusual repair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if he has a regular winter and there's snow, then he doesn't get it torn up. But this was all the stuff to repair from the heavy usage.
Is it coming back? Because when
it looks
I was
great.
Out there a month ago,
all the
ago,
seating's coming back. I'll send you guys pictures of what it looked like in April and what it looked like last week. It's really popped back. Steve and Austin, those guys have done a great job. But it takes a while after all that usage during January, February, where carts are on it and it's not recovering like it should.
I guess my question, so if somebody in this situation where they say fund balance, is that just his general, like
yes.
operating
his,
account?
His operating fund?
Yes.
So over the years, there's been a few operations that have set aside some fund balances, and they're done so. We do it because we know they're expensive operations. The golf course has a small fund balance. The fire department has a fund balance that we try to put money in when we can because we know those large trucks cost a lot of money.
So essentially, it's their
aquatic
own,
sunny.
Either their
no,
own rainy day fund.
No, it's not theirs. None of it's theirs. It all belongs to the city, and it needs to be appropriated by the city council.
Yeah.
Oh, but you've just chosen to
this is how the
yeah.
city has structured it so that we don't spend it on other stuff. We have a fund balance for the aquatic center. We have a fund balance for the theater.
Gotcha.
We know the theater is going to cost a couple $1 million to renovate. We know the aquatic center, if we have problems up there, it's going to be expensive. So we try to set some money aside to make sure we can pay for these things.
But they can't spend money out of there. They have to transfer it to a different account before they can actually.
They have no authorization to spend money out of there at all. It's still under the control of the city council.
Yeah.
Think of it more of a,
that's why it's coming
we got it earmarked for these purposes within our budget.
Gotcha.
That's why we're here. That's why we're here is to
yep.
because of that.
Yeah, to move it. That makes sense. I was just curious. Okay.
Thank you.
I was trying to explain the airport one, but I can't.
No, it's very. We got it. We understand.
And that was it on those.
I can't say it.
Hey, I just had two comments, and one of them may have been covered earlier. It's under city engineer. I wondered why we had spent $45,000 additional dollars on professional service, tech service, computer. What, I'm trying to get the line across here right. Professional and technical services.
Is that how you paid for all this stuff, or was that?
I don't know.
No, engineering didn't pay for any of this.
Oh. We budgeted 45, and it's coming in at 90.
Is
Does anybody remember?
Didn't they do...
Or was it the remodel upstairs?
Remodel computers.
Right, and we have some various studies and things that we have budgeted out of some of that as well that we need to hire consultants to help us with.
Okay, I just want to know what it was. Then the other thing is, and we reviewed it, but it went by so fast, is, boy, we really missed the mark. We'd have had a lot more animals this year. We really missed the mark on food and supplies for our animal shelter.
If you listen, sorry, that was not right. Nice saying. But they did say when Chief Adams was here last time talking about that, isn't that this? They've had more animals here this year than any other year. Wasn't that what he said?
Yeah, and I think he also, well, at least he told me that the donations of food fluctuates. Some years we get a lot of food donated, some years we don't.
Yeah, well, and inflation.
I think
it costs more than it used to. Yeah.
Nationwide, we're still seeing, you know, during lockdowns, COVID. A lot of people got animals that they no longer want to care for.
Yeah, well, and I've talked to Brittany. We need to do more stuff on social media and stuff that we can accept donations. We need to do more promoting of it. So that was all. It was just a statement.
This is a public hearing. I'll open the public hearing now. Seeing none, no one, we'll close public hearing, and this goes on action.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're concerned about money.
Item number 9, consider the certified tax rate.
This is the most confusing.
This is the part where you make us look good, right?
Make it a little bit.
This one
we can all claim we lowered taxes.
Yeah.
So as you can see, last year was 0.001607, and this year, coming into this year, it is going to be 0.001583. That gives us $5.9 million in the regular general fund revenue and $506,000 for the bond, for the GEO bond.
That's the one on the Aquatic Center.
Yeah. The one for the general fund revenue, it is $462,000 higher than what we budgeted because we didn't have the percentage at the time when we were going through that.
Right.
So this is not a new tax or an increase. It's a standard property tax assessment. It's developed by the Iron County Assessor's Office, and they give us what we're allowed to assess.
I cannot, but I don't understand the county. We always get this information after we have budgeted. And they run on a calendar year, so they know in December where they are. It's very frustrating.
I contacted them at the beginning of the month, and they still didn't have it, and it was another week went by before I got the email saying that they were ready.
Yeah, this happens every year.
Just so I understand, because I think I understand this, but people ask this all the time. The way that this essentially works is we kind of work backwards, right? So we take the total number of tax total that we're allowed to collect, and as property values go up, if that number... if the values go up, but that number stays where it is, then the percentage then has to go down, and that's essentially what's happening. So
except for new growth.
It's a middle of the
town. Except for new growth.
Correct.
You add new growth.
You do add new growth to that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So this is taking the budget number, dividing it by the total value of the homes existing, and that gets you what you're allowed to charge percentage-wise, and then the new growth is on top of that.
They're probably waiting for a study to be done to get the report out.
And all we can really do is accept this because this comes from the county, correct?
So let the record reflect we are lowering taxes yet again.
So can we put this on consent?
Because anything aside from this would require a truth in taxation.
Oh, I'm sorry, there's a resolution.
Oh, so it's got to go in action. Sorry.
Is that right, Paul? So any variance from this would require a truth in taxation.
Mm-hmm. So if you got to the situation as a city where your budget was such that you needed to generate more revenue from property tax, that would trigger a truth in taxation process.
And so do they take last year's budget number? Is that how they... Because if our budget goes up this year, if we say, hey, we need to collect more because we have a higher budget, then do they do it off of... So they're using last year's budget number.
If you ask more detailed questions, staff's going to melt and wither.
Okay.
Because we understand this truth or this process of setting the certified tax rate about as good as you do.
Okay.
So just do what they ask.
Let's move on to item 10.
Item number 10, consider granting a power easement for Rocky Mountain Power on city property located at 7218 North, 2300 West.
This is just to move the line. Rocky Mountain's requiring it from us, and we, of course, need them to do it. So that's pretty much the long and short.
All right. Sounds good.
Do whatever they ask.
Can you put that on consent?
Can this go on consent?
It can, yes.
Let's put it on consent.
It is.
Sweet. Okay. Mayor, I would move that we adjourn this work meeting.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
That's unanimous.
Sorry, Renan. We went 10 minutes over.